This is the iPhone LA Podcast, episode 18 for August 26th, 2008. Welcome to the iPhone LA Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and this is the show that discusses all things iPhone. And joining me on our panel today, it's a big one, Adam Christensen is here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
I am good. How was your flight back from the expo?
Oh, it was perfectly fine. It's quick. You know, I'm in San Diego, so it's only a 45-minute flight.
Great. Yeah. I think Dave had some problems with his flight, so it's good that you didn't have any problems. And it was awesome to hang out with you and go to that super nerdy Star Trek thing.
We did all the nerdy things, you know, that and we also got over because Victor told us about the Surface table over at Rio. So we got to play with some Microsoft technology for a little while.
We went all out nerd in Vegas.
Exactly.
And Jeff Gamet joins us from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good to be back again. As always, I didn't get to go do the table thing, but it probably would have crashed had I been there. That's my luck.
It actually did hold up to expectations and crashed at least three or four times. It was quite delightful.
Well, excellent.
It actually crashed three times. Every time that it would crash, it crashed three times, just to be thorough.
Yeah.
But we did get to hang out, even though we didn't get to go to the Surface table together.
That's true. And by the way, your cookies rock.
Yes. I gave everybody cookies that I could find. I made a whole bunch because I feel like I owe everyone who comes on the podcast, I owe them a cookie because I'm inconveniencing them somehow. So I always tell them that I owe them cookies, and I finally brought them, and I had enough to give to quite a few people, even those who I didn't feel I owed cookies to. And also, from the Mac Observer and, of course, Backbeat Media, Dave Hamilton is here, and we got to ride the roller coaster together.
That thing went fast, man. Zero to 70 in about 2 seconds.
It was pretty awesome. Good. It was frightening when we saw the other people do it. You guys didn't want to do it, and we had to, you know, just do it, and it was phenomenal.
Yeah, awesome. And so thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, it was fantastic seeing you in Vegas and finally meeting Lisa. I had a blast.
Yeah, it was great to get Lisa out there. Lots and lots of fun.
And last but not least, we have Mr. Merlin Mann on the show. Hello, Merlin.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for coming.
It's my pleasure. Very nice to be here. I had no idea Adam was going to be here. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Merlin. How you doing?
This is awesome. Hello, all these
long
people
time no
here.
Talk.
Yeah, this is fantastic. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah. Merlin is one of the hosts of the critically acclaimed, at least that's how I feel about it, You Look Nice Today podcast. It's one of my favorite podcasts, and it's certainly one of the funniest things I've ever heard. And if you haven't listened to You Look Nice Today, what's the best way to describe that show?
I call it fart jazz. It's a very sophisticated, complicated, quote-unquote humor. It's mainly about butts and woo-woos and things that are embarrassing that we did when we were 12.
Yeah, I remember you describing it once as bathroom humor with a master's degree.
Yes, yes, and from a state school.
I think that should be your catchphrase. You should put that at the bottom of at the album art.
Whatever it takes. We want to get up to 10 listeners, and we'll do what it takes to get there.
Exactly. So when can we expect another episode?
You know, that's need to know information. But the truth is, I think Sandwich has one on deck right now. We're just kind of like coming out of the summer break kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we'll get back into our normal, irregular schedule. I think in the next few days, ..
Cool. Well, I'm definitely looking forward
to it. Soon. You got to ask Adam. Adam does all the work. Scott and I just show up and drink and talk, but Adam does all the actual work that makes it into a podcast.
Gotcha. Well, he does a good job with that. The sound quality is excellent.
Hey, Merlin, I forgot to give you the proper greeting of meow.
Is that so you warn me so I don't get scared that you're behind me? Meow.
Yeah, I think we're all You Look Nice Today fans.
Oh, you don't need to pretend. That's okay. That's okay. But we're talking about iPhones today? That's exciting.
I believe we are talking about the iPhone today. And thank you for getting us on track. I never really thought that you'd be the one to steer a podcast on track, but
I get a bad rap for that. I'm not gonna lie to you. I get a bad rap for that. And the thing is, I only change the subject when it gets boring. I don't actually. It's rat holes are just a way of trying to make it interesting again.
Which is his way of saying that talking about You Look Nice Today was boring.
Oh,
it was very boring. No, but I am excited. I'm a reluctant iPhone lover. You know, I didn't always used to be a lover of the iPhone, but now I'm a huge fan. I'm a power nerd.
Do you have an iPhone 3G?
No, I have the quote unquote old iPhone.
Okay, and why haven't you gotten the iPhone 3G?
I think it's funny that you have to ask someone a question like that. Like, why haven't you bought this new thing? I have the old one and it works fine. And what I read between the concerns about cost over time, mm-hmm. combined with what I was hearing anyway about battery life, kind of put me off. And the other one, the 2.0 update when it works is pretty sexy. That's kind of mostly what I wanted, but yeah. I may still do it because I'd like my wife to have one as well. So I may end up doing it in the end. But did you guys all get the fancy new one?
Well, you know, as you were saying that was interesting. I got my wife 2G, you know, the first generation iPhone back when it came out. I was a Trio guy and was reluctant to move. Finally, when the iPhone 3G came out, I picked one up. But I've basically neutered this thing down to being a first generation iPhone. I've turned off location services and 3G and all that other good stuff in the interest of battery life. So yeah, I'm with you. It you know, I get to pay an extra 10 or 15 bucks a month for the same thing that my wife has, which is beautiful. Excellent. Got it. Gotta love it.
Yes.
But at least mine's the newest and latest and greatest, or at least so it says.
It's shinier.
It's your hand better.
Yeah.
That's gotta be worth 10 bucks a month right there.
To fit your hand uh-huh. better. It doesn't slip out as easy.
And
can I bill that to your account, Jeff?
I'm sure you already are.
All right. Well, let's start talking about some iPhone stuff. The first story we have to talk about, there was an email sent from Steve Jobs. It was rather brief. It was regarding a user's complaint about the iPhone 3G and reception problems and just total weirdness with the 3G service. And his email response was that we're working on it and that the bug affects 2% of iPhones shipped and they hope to have an update soon. And of course, I think it was last week we had an update, iPhone 2.0.2. Didn't really fix any of the interface problems or any of that stuff that we've been complaining about, but supposedly, it has some fixes for the people who are affected with the iPhone 3G connectivity issues. And the only problem I've ever had with my iPhone 3G was in Las Vegas when I was out there. It worked pretty well at the start of the expo, and I know this because I got the Quick guys to put Quick on my iPhone because it was hacked already, and it worked pretty well the first and the second. I think it worked all three of the days, except toward the end of the third day and the next day after that, it just the 3G connection, the data just did not hold out. It was switching back and forth between Edge and 3G. And is that what everyone else who was in Vegas, were you guys experiencing that as well?
You said that email from Steve Jobs was brief, Michael. That it included a comma. And I think even one prepositional phrase, that's huge for an email from him.
Yeah. Were you guys experiencing the same problems in Las Vegas? Or
I had 3G off.
You had 3G off. Okay. Yeah.
I don't own a 3G iPhone, so.
Okay. And Jeff, were you having 3G problems there?
It narrows down to me. Okay. I did not have 3G problems. I was actually very pleased with the 3G performance. But keep in mind, my only basis for comparison is AT&T's 3G coverage in Denver, which sucks really bad.
Okay. Well, yeah. Otherwise, outside of Las Vegas, when I came back to the Chicago area, it was absolutely fine, and I was streaming from Quick and all of that, which is my favorite thing to do now for my iPhone. But there is a... there is one customer who is suing Apple for the 3G flakiness. She's, you know, it's a class action suit that she's looking to get together. And the it's really interesting what's happening with the 3G problems. I haven't really been experiencing them except, like I said, in Las Vegas, and I think that was more of a carrier problem more than anything. But what's happening with a lot of these people is, you know, of course, it's switching back and forth between 3G and 2G and, you know, it dropping calls and not being able to make calls with full signal. And I think one of the, I think the editor-in-chief at Ars Technica is even having a problem where now, after the iPhone 2.0.2 update, he can't make calls unless he has the turn off 3G switch flipped. So it seems to be affecting a lot of people in many, many different ways. What I found was cool. Wired actually did a study where they said, hey, okay, everybody with an iPhone 3G, go to this website, test your iPhone speed, and then send it to us, upload it to this giant map where we can figure out where you're from and what the 3G speed is in that area. And then we'll collect all of that together and determine whether or not it's more of an iPhone thing or if it's more of a carrier thing. And they found that it is, of course, for the most part, a carrier thing. Which doesn't surprise me because I would assume that, you know, we're all using the same iPhone 3G and we're all using the same 2.0 whatever software. I guess there's a bug with a couple people who are having just terrible problems. I don't know if they've tried restoring or not. But for the most part, it showed that it's a carrier thing. And I think that the study showed that the U.S. was, in third place, tied with... I don't know where we were tied, but we're certainly not the fastest the fastest 3G network in the world.
It was Telstra, Telia, and SoftBank
that we were tied with.
That group, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say what I find interesting is I think that we're really talking about two separate things here, though. I mean, the Wired study. I mean, for Wired to come out and say that it's the carrier's fault. Their study was really only looking at the speed of the network, so that's assuming you have a 3G connection. The other problem that seems to be plaguing a lot of people, and I have a couple guys in Australia who took literally two iPhones and a third phone, all on the Vodafone 3G network, put them right next to each other in the same location, and the iPhones had no 3G coverage, and the other device, I think it was a Samsung or LG or something like that, had full 3G coverage. So, you know, I do kind of buy that there's something wrong in the hardware as well, at least impacting a certain percentage of users. Apple, I think, claimed about 2%.
Right, yeah.
But from the emails I'm getting, it seems to be much larger. So, you know, I think the speeds of the networks is a whole different thing. I mean, and that's assuming you can get 3G coverage. I do find it interesting that there's such a vast difference in the connection speed, but I really think we're talking about two different things.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think Blue Test did a study, a closed chamber test with the iPhone, the Sony Ericsson P1, and the Nokia N73. And I think they basically found that the 3G circuitry in the iPhone performed the same as the other two in their closed chamber test. So there's a lot of interesting data coming out that's not really syncing up with each other.
Now, Dave, can I ask you about that? Because I read that test too, and that seemed to be where it was kind of testing the reception on the antenna in the chip. And you know, everything Apple's saying is that this is something they can fix in software. So it sounds to me like it's maybe a communications problem in terms of the hardware itself. You know, it's not really the hardware. I think what everybody's concluding is that yeah, it is the software. There's some sort of communications bug between the data coming in, you know, being received and then it actually, I guess, you know, passing through. I'm not sure what happens in software on the phone, but it sounds like a problem with the software in the controller chipsets or the firmware or something like that. I mean, that seems to be what all these studies, if you kind of look at them all as a whole, seem to be pointing to. I don't know, you know, if anybody else is kind of drawing that conclusion, but, you know, that seems to be what it looks like to me.
Seems like a valid conclusion, yeah.
And it's just really weird as far as, you know, when 3G kind of drops out. You know, when I was in Chicago for Lollapalooza, of course, in the morning, the 3G network worked great, and I was able to tweet and all of that. And at some point during the afternoon, it would start flaking out, and I wouldn't be able to get a network connection. Of course, I could switch over to the edge connection, and I found two things. Obviously, you know, the edge connection worked better than the 3G connection because it's two different, I guess, rings on the tower. So you're getting a different connection. But I also noticed that sometimes you would get a better, at least as far as the bars go on the phone, you'd get a better signal strength from the edge at some times. And from what I know, at least around my area, all the towers that we have that are, you know, GSM, AT&T towers, they're all outfitted with the 3G, connection. But it seems like at some points the edge towers get, they're all edge and 3G, but it seems like edge gets better reception on there. And I don't know, I heard from someone that it may be that the bars that you see on the phone aren't necessarily the reception that you're getting, but it's more how much throughput you're getting from that connection. Dave, have you heard anything about that, or do you know anything about, you know, how that works?
I don't. I was actually going to look up and see if we could find if 3G and edge use different frequencies, because if they do, then of course, even transmitting from the same location, different frequencies at different bandwidths will go different distances, just like
right,
you get better range with AM versus FM and so on and so forth. So,
right.
Well, I'm not sure what the, I'm not sure what the magic answer there is though.
As far as the frequencies go in, you know, the towers, I think that it's like, I think they can use either frequency. I think it's like 1900 or, 950 or something like that. They're using, certain frequencies in certain areas. So right, you know, where I am, they're using the same frequency for edge and for 3G. So I don't think that it's really, I don't think that's something that's really going to be, impacting that. So it may be something with the software. Certainly there are people with problems. So, you know, who knows as far as that goes.
I think based on what I'm reading very quickly here, that Edge can use the 950 or the 1900, but 3G can only use 1900. And if that's the case, then there you go, because 900 is going to go further than right. The 1900 is.
Well, from what I heard from the AT&T CEO, he said that they would be using the 900 megahertz network for some areas for using the 3G. So I don't think that they can use both frequencies.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
The one thing that I've had reports from a lot of people, and I've actually noticed myself just with my first gen iPhone, is that there does seem to be general problems. I don't know if any of you have noticed a similar thing with just moving between different types of connections. So even going between Wi-Fi and Edge, sometimes the phone freaks out. And I have to wonder if, you know, maybe especially if there's reception problems or you're in a weak area. I know that Katie from the MacCore podcast was having big problems because at home she would have sort of one bar on 3G, but full bars on 2G, and just that switching back and forth, the phone just kind of got locked up and confused. And so that was really her problem, was where it will try and glob onto the 3G signal no matter how weak, and not really do that handoff, you know, transition very well.
Right, yeah. Now, Merlin, you said that you don't have an iPhone 3G, and we're talking about all these, you know, flaky problems, and of course there are many more problems with the iPhone 2.0 software outside of the 3G connection issues. Have you been seeing a lot of flakiness with your iPhone 2.0, even on your first generation iPhone?
Yeah, I have. It's hard to know. I mean, I don't track this stuff as carefully as a lot of people do, and I wouldn't want to pretend that I do. So I'm always kind of reluctant to blame this or that thing on this or that other thing. But yeah, I mean, I definitely notice. I actually had a post about this. I can try and find what I said about this once before. I have noticed a lot more crashing since 2. There are definitely all kinds of delays left and right with, I don't know, just in a very general way, it just does not feel as responsive. And by which I mean, it's not just slow. Sometimes it doesn't do what I wanted it to do because it feels frozen. So I get that. I get... what else? Sometimes I've had a few like just crazy old school hangs, like a bomb, you would get on OS 9.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm getting all of that. Yeah, as you say, I'm not a 3G user, so I don't even really understand how the cascade of connectivity works on 3G, but there's a lot of ways that I'm not trying to change the topic, but what I really notice as I become more aware of the iPhone 2's glitches, what I start to notice is the points where there are little bits of hang up and where I start feeling like, well, gosh, you know, this kind of does suck as a phone sometimes. I notice how many clicks it is to actually get to dialing a number sometimes. And I notice that, oh, gosh, I'm stuck in this little ghetto over here and I want to get to someplace else. And there's all kinds of ways in which I think the 2.0 update shows at once how powerful this will be once the SDK is widely adopted by a lot of great programmers with high quality products. But it also really shows you the numerous ways in which this can really still be improved. I'm guessing probably from a hardware standpoint, more things like hardwired buttons for making a call or for using a camera. So I just think it's kind of interesting that with such a large number of people using this thing and suffering from some of these problems, I think it also just shows a lot of the opportunity that they've got for making the next generation better and more solid.
So you think that... Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to make a snarky comment and say, you know, maybe Apple just felt that they were being left out of the cell phone party. I mean, they put 1.0 out and it was so great and seamless, and they thought, well, you know what, our phone can suck too.
Yeah, it could be. There's a lot of moving parts to a project like this. There's a lot of complexity to making these pieces fit together. So I would not want to be too glib about, you know, like I can be some from time to time about, you know, pointing fingers at this or that Apple group. I don't know. I have no conception of what's involved in getting like something like this to work with hardware and with, you know, trying to receive a signal. But I was recently out of town for a few days with family and in a place that I could rarely even get a phone signal, let alone Edge. And it's really made me more acutely aware of how much I want to entrust to this. And I'm starting to already see myself using this in slightly different ways. So, I'm not trying to sound, not trying to make spooky music in the background, but I will say that if people can't get onto the internet with their iPhone, you start using it really differently. And you start using it in a way that Apple kind of didn't intend you to use it. Because it starts kind of seeming like a costly phone again when you can't get on the web.
So as far as the iPhone 2.0 goes, have you considered downgrading or are the third-party applications really doing it for you?
Well, a very small number of increasingly small number of third-party applications are doing it for me. There's some that are just fantastic, and then a lot that I was pretty much, you know, finished with in about 6 or 7 minutes. But I think it's going to be, obviously it's exciting what you can do with this stuff, and I don't know how I'd live without something like OmniFocus or, you know, even something like Shazam. I showed Shazam to my family, most of whom hadn't even seen an iPhone, and, you know, it was like magic. It was, frankly, magical.
Yeah.
So there's so much opportunity with figuring out how to really use the location stuff and how to really use the core functionalities. And I think right now we're seeing a lot of kind of rich prototypes that kind of don't work very well for the most part.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of crap on the App Store right now.
Even the good stuff, even some of the good stuff could use some polish. And
yeah,
I think, you know, as we sit there and use the iPhone more and more, I think we start to understand, oh, this app works well because XYZ. It understands how to have this be cognitively satisfying in my hands. And I think we're still seeing people figure that out. So I have to think this all will get better. It's a really complicated problem to solve, though. So there's also plenty of room for it to blow apart.
Exactly.
Well, you know, something interesting along those lines that I noticed is, and this is because of the way the iPhone SDK is so much like developing for the Mac. And, it's all in Cocoa and you're doing all that same stuff. It's just some different toolbox calls. We're seeing most of the apps come from Mac developers, not from people that have been developing for other phone platforms for years and years and years. And I think that kind of speaks to what you were saying there, Merlin, where people haven't really fully grasped how to develop stuff for a mobile device. Some people have certainly done it, and others have stumbled into various components of it. But over time, as these people truly become phone developers and as people from other phone platforms, other mobile platforms are attracted to the iPhone for obvious and various reasons, I think we will see it come around. But we're not there yet. Yeah.
definitely. And I wanted to mention, Merlin, that we do have an iPhone pick of the week type thing that we do at the end of the show. So that's usually something like an application or a, or an accessory that you like. So I just wanted to put that out there so you can think of one. But you know, by the time we get there, but you know, I've noticed with the iPhone apps, there are a lot of them, like you said, seem really experimental and, you know, stuff like, you know, Phone Saver. Yeah, that's a really cool idea. And it, I think it actually carries over from the Mac Saver idea. So it wasn't as experimental as other things have been. Like there are a lot of really gimmicky things on there that, you know, use the accelerometer or something like that. And I think that a really good example of a game that uses the accelerometer is a game called Dizzy Bee. And I don't know what the developers experiences with developing for the Mac, but I think that's a really, really solid example of a game that uses makes use of the accelerometer, you know, not to a point where it's, you know, overly used, but it works perfectly for the situation that they're giving you for that game. So, you know, I think we have a long way to go with the iPhone apps and that sort of thing. It's an early it's a new platform, so you know we're working on that. And speaking of applications, there's a new version of Quick that was announced. I think it was a day before New Media Expo, and so I went down to the Quick booth when I got to New Media Expo, and just kind of jokingly, because I'm friends with some of the people who work at Quick, and I've been asking them, you know, when can I see a version of Quick for the iPhone 3G? And they said, well, it's coming. You're gonna have to wait, and we'll send you an email. So I just sort of jokingly went down there and said, hey, where's you know, the iPhone 3G version of Quick? And he said, well, it's right here. Have you jailbroken your phone? And you know, we installed it, and it works really well. The first version of Quick for the iPhone was pretty buggy, and they've worked a lot of that stuff out. With the iPhone 3G version, of course, this version actually works over 3G and not just over Wi-Fi. And Quick really at this point, because of NetShare, and I know that NetShare isn't available on the App Store, but Quick is the only reason for me to truly jailbreak my phone at this point. Merlin, I don't know how you... Have you ever done a jailbreak on your phone?
I don't think so. I did... I think I did the really simple version of that where I ran an app and it let me change a few things, but I haven't done anything really serious with it. I mean, I use it. It's not, you know, it's not a toy for me. I need it for work. And if it broke, I wouldn't have a phone. So right. I don't have extras to play with. And I don't know. I think maybe I'm just an old man. I don't really need any of that. Gotcha. I definitely don't need Quick.
So you've played with Quick before, and you're familiar with it, right?
No, but I've seen what's produced with it, and I'm persuaded that it's something that fewer people should have. I mean, is there something that's made with Quick that you're really looking forward to people putting out?
No, not really. I think it's really cool for events like, you know, New Media Expo. When we, you know, I went down to the Microsoft Surface, and you know, I put out a tweet 20 minutes before I decided to do that, saying, "Hey, I'm going to go down and check out the Microsoft Surface, and I'm going to stream it on Quick." But there is a lot of junk out there, as far as, you know, people streaming, their dog in the dark, you know, for 20 minutes.
I'm being, as we say in the business, sarcastic. But there's certainly great things that you could do with it. I think it all depends on how you want to use this thing. I'm not sure why you wouldn't want to just get a video camera or find some way to stream from a higher quality thing than a phone. But it's, you know, that's not how that kind of make culture works. The idea, I guess, is to figure out how you can push the envelope with it. My situation is that, you know, that's not... I haven't seen anything yet that's made me really, really, really want to break it. There was, like, I was tempted. I mean, I've seen some of the stuff that people were doing, you know, and it's fun. But I mean, I've got a computer, you know, and I do computer stuff on a computer, and I do phone stuff on the phone. So anyway, I don't know. That's just me. I'm just a jerk. But for me, the iPhone is mostly about data capture and occasionally about data retrieval. And I've got a really nice video camera if I want to tape something.
Right, yeah.
And then, you know what's neat about that is there's this thing. You guys are all on 202, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. There's this new thing called editing, where you can go in and take a video and then cut out the parts that aren't amusing. And I think that's available to everybody now. But if you have video, you can edit it. And then that makes it good. So that is something that I think is a nice feature. And I wish that would roll out broader, I guess.
Well, are you looking for – would you like Apple to put something that allows video recording on the phone, or do you think that that's –
No, I'd like a pill that makes me less of a dick. I'd like it, and I think streaming is a terrible idea, but and I hope you let that out. But no, that sounds like a neat service. I'm sure it's very cool. I have been tempted by the jailbreaking. I would be so sad if I break my phone, because then I'd have to buy another one, and you know. Do you guys all, no, tell me, do you guys all do this? You guys all do the thing and you SSH in? I mean, I did this to my Apple TV, but I did it with, kind of clerical intervention from people who knew what to do. Do you guys all do that?
I don't do the jailbreak thing for a lot of the same reasons. I need to be able to rely on my phone when I'm out. And if it doesn't work, I need to be able to make a phone call and say, we need to fix this together kind of thing. And I don't want to be on my own in that little bit of hell there. But yeah. But I'm really thankful for all the people that have jailbroken their phone, because without it, I don't think the App Store would be as good as it is. I think that by people pushing that envelope, it kind of indicated to Apple, yeah, look, we need to make this work well, and we need to allow plenty of apps in. Otherwise, people are going to keep jailbreaking these things, and we're going to encourage that, and we don't really want to. So, I think Quick is yet another example of that, Apple's going to see that and say, yeah, we need to do some more in this regard if a lot of people adopt it. So I think it's a great thing. It's just not something that I'm...
That's a really good point. And I just want to be clear that, first of all, I'm sure Quick is a great product and they have wonderful Americans working for them. But also that I'm not doing this for ecclesiastical reasons. Like sometimes I hear my friend Scott Bourne saying it, like he's afraid Steve's going to get mad at him if he does stuff to his phone. And that's not my feeling at all. I mean, if there was a way to do this, like I said, I put down the dough to like be able to hack my Apple TV. I also don't make my own ketchup or line my own brakes. I mean, there's some stuff that I would trust to other people if they're good at it and there's a reason. I just haven't had enough of a reason that, it's always like invariably like I'm about to travel or something,
Right.
And invariably I'll get this urge to like, I'm going to go do this thing. And then I end up like, I can't sync my contacts through the air. And I'm on, you know what I mean? And that's always what happens to me. I try to get too ambitious and act like I'm Mark Frauenfelder and understand what I'm doing. I don't. And I would probably break it.
Yeah, and I think that, with the App Store especially, the reasons for hacking your iPhone at this point, there are less and less reasons to do that. Obviously, there's the unlock for people who don't want to, get legitimate service, which is has always been something for me that I don't really understand, at least in the US, because the experience is so much better to have a fully supported AT&T phone. You get the visual voicemail and you don't have to set up all these weird things. But like Dave said, and we discussed this on the panel at New Media Expo, I think that the jailbreak community has really pushed Apple forward in coming up with the App Store. I think that the App Store really looks a lot like installer.app. And for me, like I said, Quick is the only thing that I really look forward to when I do a jailbreak. That and, I kind of use the excuse that I have an iPhone website and I need to know how to do this stuff. That's my excuse for being reckless with my iPhone. But I think that I would do it anyway, just because I like living on the edge and doing the crazy stuff that, may make me drop a call when I'm talking to someone important. So, that's just what I do. I think that when Apple gets to the point where video capture is possible and I don't have any other real reasons to jailbreak my phone, if Quick is on the App Store, I don't think I'll have a good reason to jailbreak my phone. I doubt that I will do it. Of course, I'll report on it happening. But there is less and less of a reason to jailbreak your phone. The only other thing that I like doing at this point is, having the ability to jump in there and look at the P lists and try and troubleshoot something that's going on. And that's becoming more of a problem with 2.0. But, Apple's going to fix that. So, who knows? Merlin, do you use the Dot Mac sync, the over the air? Or I guess it's not Dot Mac anymore. It's Mobile Me. Do you use the push contacts and all that? Is that something you?
Yeah, I've purchased it. Yes, and I just, it kind of works. The syncing over the air stuff works pretty well. The file syncing back on the Mac is a little more problematic, but I've actually had pretty good success with the over the air syncing in general. The anecdote I just shared with you is true and real. I had done a full restore. Leo Laporte said, "Go restore from the bottom and it'll be great." And I kind of messed it up because I'm an idiot. And then I had to restore everything, get my old stuff on there, and I lost all my apps and da 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 da. Long story short, this is like the day before I've got to leave for a week, and which I deserve because I didn't know what I was doing. But then I thought, oh, this is great. This is no problem. I'll just flip on the syncing, and like in seconds, 1,500 contacts will fly through the ether and land on here, and all will be right in the world, and I can do things on the plane. And it didn't happen. It took half a day before it got synced. I'm not sure if that was the question that you were asking, but I'm always happy to identify opportunities for improvement in the mobile me space.
Well, I think that they're...
You like the way I put that? Wasn't that classy?
That's much nicer than I've been about it. Let's just say that.
You don't follow me on Twitter. That's where I've had a chance to vent a little of this, but it's going to be great. That file syncing is not that important. I mean, who really needs files, right?
Yeah. Well, if you've got files, it means that you've got to do some work. So if you don't have any files, your day is clear. You're totally good to go.
It's a terrific point. You're exactly right. I also think really a lot of everything I want to do, I could probably just do as a streaming video cast. So if I and be able to send letters and blog posts and the things that I'm trying to write for money and what have you, I could send that through Quick. And then people could watch that and comment on it in like an IRC-like channel. And maybe they could send editors the copy that got lost. And that would be handy. Crowdsourcing.
And if you needed a file, you just Twitter that you need it. And maybe somebody will send it back to you if you spent the time to go over it with your Quick camera there.
Exactly. You're about to become very, very rich with implementing this.
I think so. Yeah, that's right.
You know, Dave, I'm so excited with this. I'm already deleting every file I have in all of my TMO directories.
You know, Perfect. Actually, this is a life hack. I don't know if this helps you at all. There's a life hack. There's another way to do that faster, which is to hit sync.
Yes.
Mm. That'll just zero everything right out, and you'll just be able to start fresh.
About once every 6 weeks, that's exactly what it does for me. I love it. It's beautiful.
It's like Christmas.
Surprise Christmas, though. It's like un-Christmas, you know?
It's funny. I mean, as long as we're being jerks about this, the thing that drives me crazy is I'll be working on one computer, and I really do work on a couple, three, you know, computers. And I'll be working on something, and I'll write something, and I'll be really happy with where it's going, and I'll forget about it for a day or two, and I'll go work on other stuff, and things happen, and I got files, and everything's going great. And then one day I'll be working on a draft of something, and I'll go, wait a minute. Something's not right here. And this is not what I remember writing earlier. And I'll look and I'll see that the last sync was 3 days ago.
Yeah. I like that it doesn't warn you.
No, it suddenly stops syncing. Like, if you're lucky, you get the pop-up with the little orange button saying, hey, help me, cut my steak for me. I can't figure out that a larger, more recent file should win. Help me understand this. But you don't even get that. Like, sometimes it just farts out and then you're working on three different versions of a file and you got to run diff to like make them work together.
Yeah, it sucks. I don't know why.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
Well, the reason I bring it up is for two reasons. Obviously, the first is that Apple's given another 60-day extension. I think the first one was 30 days, but it's a 60-day extension to all subscribers to MobileMe, and thankfully that's also for people who had the trial version, which is what I generally do. At least I did that before they started requiring a credit card to sign up for the free trial. I would just, keep signing up for a free trial and, syncing my stuff that way. So I guess it's only right that my contacts and stuff just decide to not just stop syncing all of a sudden onto my phone. And, I've had that with my bookmarks, and you have to actually turn it off, delete everything, turn it back on. And so I have been experiencing problems with MobileMe. At first it was pretty good, and I really liked the service. And as soon as it starts working, which, it probably never will because it's .Mac at its heart, it's a good idea. But I think that, Merlin, you have to go at some point pretty quickly. So we should probably move on to our iPhone picks. And, to give you just a couple more minutes to prepare for that, I'm going to ask Adam, what is your iPhone pick for the week. Oh,
okay. I have mine, and hopefully I just discovered this week, and hopefully I'm not stealing it from anybody, but have you guys all tried out Simplify Media? I kept hearing about it and didn't try it.
Does that really work? Because it sounds like a magic trick.
It works amazingly well. Now, I'm just doing it for myself. What it is this is a little app that you install on your Mac, and it actually meets the promise of like what, you know, Back to My Mac was supposed to do. I just installed this little app. It scans your iTunes library and then makes that available to a little free app on the iPhone to stream all of your audio content from your entire iTunes library. You can also have it just look in a folder on your Mac. And I think there's one other option. I've just been doing the iTunes thing. And then on top of that, you can invite up to 30 people by entering their email address. And those people can also listen to stream your iTunes library. It's just streaming only, but it works surprisingly well. It works every bit as good as Pandora, if anybody's tried that. So even over the Edge network, it works fairly well for me. It takes a little longer to buffer, but it's amazing. I now have full access to my home iTunes library from pretty much wherever I have a phone connection.
And I was really
You can do this over Edge too. It works okay.
Longer to buffer, but yeah, okay. I mean, and I guess they had to turn some of the features off. That it was streaming the album art and stuff like that. They've turned that off temporarily, but they're working on some fixes. But yeah, it's another one of those magical apps. Anybody who's tried, you know, the AOL radio or the Pandora thing, you know, it's one of those kind of audio apps that you're like, wow, this really works. It was easy to set up and it just, you know, it's amazing. It's just one of those, you know, as Merlin was saying with the Shazam, it's just like one of those magic apps that you install and show people, and they're like, wow.
This is the reason I do this podcast, to find out about this stuff ahead of time. It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, and hopefully Apple doesn't, everybody's worried it's going to be another one of the ones that Apple pulls because of the whole, you know, music art, but I think it's still available.
As far as I know, I haven't heard anything about it being pulled down, but yeah, I saw this application, in development during the jailbreak days, and it's gone through a lot, and it really works well. It works almost as well as the iPod application does right now, and you can scroll through and find the artist, and you'll see a list of albums. You can choose the album, and it'll show you the song list in the order that it appears on the album, and I think at some point you're going to be able to get album art. I thought that I saw album art. I don't know. You said that you didn't get album art. Maybe it was because you're doing it over Edge.
On the blog, they said they found a problem with it. They had to pull it down temporarily.
Okay. Yeah.
I think I don't know if it's a bandwidth issue or what, but.
Yeah. Simplify Media is just one of those, I think it's one of those killer applications that I think that Apple should really implement, on its own. I don't think they're charging for Simplify Media right now, are they?
No, they're not. They just downloaded it.
Okay.
Yeah, they are planning to, though. The initial thing was they were going to let the first 10,000 people in for free, and then they were going to start charging, but they've extended that. So I don't know if you want to sign in now. I'm sure they're going to need to monetize it at some point because, I think they manage the streaming connections and things like that. So, I'd be willing to pay a couple bucks a month for this thing, and I think a lot of people would.
Yeah, it's a great service. The only thing is I've had it kind of hang up before when I would go back to the application every once in a while. It would forget about my music library and would have to go through and reload it. And the only problem I have with the application is that it doesn't really give me a good indication of its progress when it's loading these libraries. So, you know, I'll wait for a couple minutes and I'll go back to my library and I'll see, okay, well, I still have only these couple selections. I'll have to go back and wait a little bit longer. But for the most part, especially when it works, it's great. I really love Simplify Media. And so it's a free application on the Mac. You download, it'll broadcast your music from there. It's a private thing. And Simplify Media, I think it's Simplify Media Mobile. Just look for Simplify on the App Store and you'll find it. It's a great application. And it's free right now, so grab it while you can. And Merlin, what is your iPhone pick?
This is almost certainly one that you guys have done before. It's definitely one I've talked about on other shows. I love the Amazon.com site on my iPhone.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. There's so many apps out there that overlook the way people use a phone on the go. And what do I mean by that? Well, I mean, first of all, there's all these apps out there that want to be everything to everybody, and they want to put all kinds of crap in, and there's all kinds of, oh, you know, fancy stuff, and they make money on affiliate links and da-da-da-da-da-da, and all this stuff that's really all about the kind of app they want to make rather than figuring out how to help somebody solve one problem while they're doing something with their other hand. In my case, every iPhone app can be evaluated by whether I can hold my daughter and do what I need to do at the same time. And really, holding her with one arm, that's already a little perilous. But the Amazon.com site is pretty much better than almost every iPhone app I've ever used, because it does pretty much a couple things super well. It's one of those rare cases where it actually does what it does better than the triple dub, you know, regular version of the site. And it's certainly, it's probably something you guys have used before. I'm an Amazon Prime idiot, which means I give them money to give me cheaper and sometimes free shipping on stuff. So I'll be sitting there in a store and I'll see something that I want. Now, I could sit there and I could go to Save Benji's, or I could go to this, or I could go to that, or I could be clever and take a photo, or I could go to Amazon, type in the name, and literally hit a single button to have it at my house tomorrow.
Nice.
I've done this where I stand there at the Toys R Us. God bless them. You know, you want to give a great small company like Toys R Us your business. But we're standing there saying, should we buy this giant baby gate for our baby? You know, and if you got a baby, which sounds like some of you guys do, you know that like there's a certain cost of ownership associated with doing anything in a car with someone who's crying. And so I literally just type in the name of this thing and hit one click, deliver this tomorrow, and it's there for like whatever, $3.99 delivery. This is Al Gore would not like this. This is not great for the environment. But it's such a, given especially how chaotic Amazon's product pages are in general on the triple dub, this is so stripped down to doing one thing extremely well. You can add stuff to a list. Sure, you can like see previous transactions and what have you. But in some ways, I think you can evaluate a great design of any kind by seeing the intelligence that went into leaving things out. And they left out a ton of stuff on the Amazon iPhone site to make it crazy easy to buy stuff with one click. And that's my pick. I like it a lot. And I think the reason I'm mentioning it here is that there's a lot of smart folks that listen to your show. And if you're making an iPhone app, you know, figure out how to do one thing extremely well. And it doesn't have to be something that you need, but it needs to be something that somebody else needs. And Amazon figured out that their customers need to be able to buy stuff super fast with one click, and they did it.
Yeah.
So Amazon.com on your phone.
So is that just, if you load up Amazon.com on the iPhone, it'll switch over to the iPhone version?
I think so. I've tried to be a good doobie by turning off my phone during the podcast so it wouldn't make that awful noise that Alex's phone always makes on our podcast.
Right.
So I can't see it, but it might be. Do you guys know? Is it like m.amazon.com or?
Yeah, I think it's either Amazon or iRex.
It probably just
if you just visit. Yeah.
Sorry. I think it is just amazon.com and it'll forward you. Yeah, it does.
You need to go in and say, you know, you need to enable one click like you do on the Amazon.com site. And obviously, it sounds kind of dorky that I'm sitting here trying to say go buy stuff at the time when most of us probably don't need to be buying more stuff. But you know, in the context of needing to pick stuff up, it's super fast and easy. And I'm somebody who is all about what David Allen calls ubiquitous capture, mm-hmm. with that ability to kind of get something while it's on your mind rather than trying to make an unnecessary placeholder for it.
Absolutely.
I think this affords that in a really elegant way.
Yeah, I just checked it out. I remember looking at it before. I was in a Best Buy and I was looking at some stuff and I just thought, you know, I wonder if I can get this cheaper on Amazon. Did the same thing that you did. And I didn't even realize that there was an Amazon, you know, an iPhone version of Amazon.com. And I didn't, it worked really well for me and it was very fast. And I didn't realize that you could actually buy stuff. For some reason, I thought that you couldn't buy it. Maybe it was an earlier version of the site, but that sounds phenomenal. So Amazon.com, bring it up on your iPhone and it will go to the iPhone version. Jeff, what is your pick?
Okay, first I have to say, the day that Amazon switched to having that iPhone version of their site, it was like the skies opened and the angels came down and showered praises upon me for finding it. It really was that cool. Okay, that said, I'm going complete the opposite direction. I'm talking about games. Trism. Have we talked about that before?
We haven't.
Okay, Trism is a really, really cool game. It's like, I think it's like $5.
Hey, Jeff, before you keep going, I just wanted to say thank you once again to Merlin Mann. He has to run.
You know, I suck. I do. I've got to run. And if you could tolerate me one more time, I would love to come back sometime. And I will lavish as much time as you need. But unfortunately, I booked two things too close. So Thank you very much for having me.
We would love to have you back. So check him out.
Anytime. Time and what do I wear?
Exactly. Well, pants are optional for the iPhone Alley podcast. Yes. YouLookNiceToday.com. That's his podcast. Check it out. It's not for the kids, but it is hilarious. And of course, follow him on Twitter at twitter.com/hotdogsladies. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Michael. And thanks, everybody. It's a lot of fun being here.
Yep. Have fun.
Bye, Merlin.
See ya. And Jeff, I'm sorry I had to cut you off. Your pick is Trism.
Trism, it's a game where you have to slide like rows or columns to line up similar colored triangles, and then everything disappears that's touching. And so it's that very simple kind of bejeweled style idea for a game, but it also takes the accelerometer into account. So depending on which way you're tipping your iPhone will determine which way everything slides when you end up with open spaces.
Yeah, I haven't actually played that game, but it looks really cool. And I think that I think it's Louis Mantia who, and I'm totally butchering his name. I know I am, but I think he made the at least all the graphics and stuff for that application. It's a beautiful application. I haven't had a chance to play with it. How much is that application?
I think it's $5.
$5.
Okay, here it just came up. It's $4.99.
$4.99. $5. Yep. And so it's kind of like a bejeweled type thing?
Yeah, you know, where you have to slide everything around to get stuff to line up, and then it disappears.
Gotcha. Cool. And that is in the App Store, so check that out. And Dave, what is your iPhone pick?
My iPhone pick? So, you know, I just started learning to play the guitar, and I realized that when I tune the guitar, my ear must be about 15 cents sharp. That seems to be where I tune the guitar constantly. And I thought, all right, my daughter's playing too. I need to go out and buy a tuner. Now, so I started researching tuners on, you know, Amazon or something. And then thought, wait a minute, this is silly. I've got an iPhone. Yes, I'm loathe to spend 10 bucks on some iPhone application because that seems like a lot of money. But gosh, I should just go and check and see what they've got. And sure enough, I found one for 10 bucks called Guitar Toolkit. Now, it's awesome because guitar players, in my 25 years as a drummer, I've realized one thing, and that's that guitar players are inherently lazy people. And and so this app has everything you would need. Not only does it actually have a tuning meter, right? It uses the iPhone. So you couldn't use this on a touch because the touch doesn't have the microphone. Right. But, you know, it's got a tuning meter, and you can totally tune an acoustic guitar with it. I've done it in a couple of different places. The ambient noise is pretty well restricted, and it seems to work just fine. You can set different tunings. So if you're looking to tune to a drop D or, you know, various different tunings, you can set that and have it only home in on those notes that would be in that tuning. You can also have it make tones. So that if you want to tune by ear, let's say you are on an iPod Touch, you can tune by ear just by listening to the phone. It's got a click in it, a metronome, and it's got chord charts, which are awesome. Yeah, so if I'm out, I don't know where I would be because I've only been playing guitar for about 3 weeks, but let's just say I'm out somewhere and my gosh, you know, I've got this chord, this sheet of music in front of me, and all it has is, somebody pulled it off the internet, so all it has is lyrics and chords. And I can look and see, okay, how do I make that F chord? And then I look and realize, oh, well, that's how I would make it if I was talented enough to do so. But instead, we'll transpose, and then we can do that too. So
awesome.
That's a guitar toolkit. That's
Guitar
me.
Toolkit. Now, I think there was an application. It was a jailbreak app, and it was gorgeous. It was absolutely great, and it did that chord chart thing where you can just click on a chord, and you know, you can change it to, you know, whatever variation of the chord that you want to, and it'll show you just, you know, on the strings. Is that what it looks like? This may be that app just in the App Store.
Sounds like it's exactly that app. Yeah, it shows you the chords. I showed it to my daughter, and she's like, oh, this is even better than the little sheet that our teacher gave us. She's like, this is perfect. It makes perfect sense. Looks just like my guitar. I get it.
I would totally buy that because like you, I'm also learning to play the guitar. So, you know, when I found that, I'm just like, man, this is so much better than having to look up chords on the internet or whatever, because I'm, you know, I'm just kind of winging it and, you know, looking at YouTube videos and stuff on, you know, how to play the guitar right now. So I got to check this out. So that's Guitar Toolkit. And
Toolkit. Yep. I looked. There's a couple of them. There's one that's like $5, but this one seemed like it had the best reviews for the tuner. Remember, my sole goal was finding a good guitar tuner, and some of the other tuners were a little bit too susceptible to ambient noise, at least according to the reviews. You know, that is my complaint with the App Store, is there's no way to try before you buy.
Yeah.
You know, and it is what it is for us right now. So that's why I picked this one, and it happened to come with the chord charts and everything. So it was like, well, for the extra $5, you know, I kept looking at the ones that were cheaper, thinking, you know, am I going to do better? And I finally said, to heck with it, I'll just take this one.
I think the chord charts really do it for that application, and I haven't seen it. And I would imagine that that's really, really great to have, you know, with you all the time, because you have your phone with you all the time.
Exactly. And because you can put apps on, you know, you can have multiple five computers set up to do the same apps. Now, my wife's iPhone also has Guitar Toolkit. So if I'm not there and my daughter needs to tune her guitar, she's totally good to go.
Sweet. Now, that wouldn't work for me, because I've done the stupid thing where I activate computers and I kind of forget about it and they disappear. I don't know where they are. And so I have all five of my computers activated.
Oh, just go to activate one more and it'll let you reset them all.
Oh, okay.
You remember the old days when you could unactivate individual computers?
Yeah,
and now it's just a group thing. It's all or none.
I think I already used that, though. I used it once, I think, late last year.
Use it twice a year, I think.
Twice a year? Okay.
I don't know. You might try again.
Yeah. We're also using that to do reviews across some of the staff at iPhone Alley, because, you know, sometimes the developers send us an iTunes gift card, and sometimes they send us an ad hoc version. If it's the gift card and I want to send it off to Zach, who does a lot of the reviews, I just said, you know what, here, I'll just activate your computer, and that way we won't have to do the whole, you know, should Zach get the iTunes gift card or should I? I'll just like get it, send him what he needs, and he doesn't even have to worry about it. So there you go. And my pick is a game called Expando, and it was free for a couple of days, I believe. Right now it is $2, and it is a really, really fun, extremely simple game. And the object of the game is to fill up 2/3 of the screen with smiley faces. So there are, you know, you start off with, there's like a little red ball that floats around in this area that you're playing in. And the idea is you hold down your finger in a certain area of that little playing space, and a smiley face will start to expand underneath your finger, hence the name. While you're expanding the smiley faces, you want to avoid the red balls. So you can actually move your finger around and you'll be dragging around the smiley face as you're expanding it. As you go, more and more balls show up. So it's more difficult to make, you know, giant smiley faces. So you have to go, you know, with smaller smiley faces. And this all sounds like a total, like, goofy game, kind of like my Dizzy Bee pick. But it is, a huge time sink for me. If I open up Expando, I'll just start playing it for, you know, 20, 30 minutes, because it's just so much fun, because it's so simple. And I think that, you know, the iPhone interface is great. You can do a lot of stuff with, you know, the accelerometer and, you know, touchscreen and a bunch of really crazy things. But most of my favorite applications are the ones that are, you know, really simple. And this one, it's all about just putting your finger down and making a bunch of smiley faces appear. It's really simple. It's really fun. It's $2. Check it out. It's a must have, at least in my opinion. And we'll get a review up on iPhone Alley soon. So my pick is Expando. And awesome. Have you tried that one?
No, I haven't. It sounds really cool. I wish I'd gotten it while it was free.
Yeah, I should probably ping everybody when I see a free application that's going to be, you know, going out soon. So bandwidth for the iPhone Alley podcast is provided by CashFly at CashFly.com. And don't forget to check out iPhoneAlley.com. It's the place to get iPhone news, tips, and reviews. And if you have a tip you'd like to share or an application you'd like us to review, please let us know by clicking on the contact link on the side of the page. Because, you know, the more stuff we know about, we can't see everything. So if we get emails from you guys, you know, with, hey, I want to get this application, but I don't know if it's worth it. It's $10. Can you guys take a look at it? we will be happy to get, you know, that application from the developer and do a review of it. And, you know, hopefully either save you some time and money, or, you know, we'll figure out if the app is good and you can buy it and be really satisfied with it. So definitely contact us about that. And you can find show notes for the podcast at iphonele.com/podcast. And you can send feedback or questions or anything like that regarding the podcast to podcast@iphonele.com. And Jeff Gamet is managing editor at macobserver.com and iPodObserver.com. And of course, if you can't get enough of our beloved Jeff, you can stalk him on Twitter at twitter.com/jgamet. And you can also find Dave Hamilton at the Mac Observer as well. And of course, the awesome Backbeat Media, of which we're very proud members. In fact, if you want to advertise on our podcast, you should contact the Backbeat Media guys. I believe for the podcast, it's also IPA at Backbeat Media, right?
IPA at backbeatmedia.com is a fine way to get in touch with us. That's right. Or you can just visit the website and contact us there. Whatever works, we're happy to hear from you.
Yes. And Dave is also on Twitter at twitter.com/DaveHamilton. And of course, don't forget to check out Adam Christensen's podcast, The MacCast, at maccast.com. And he's also on Twitter at twitter.com/MacCast. And I guess I should mention my Twitter, because I mentioned everybody else's, and you know, nobody knows how to follow me, and I have to keep my lead from John Braun, who recently got on Twitter. My Twitter is Michael Johnston, so twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. It's easy to remember. So thanks a lot, guys, for coming on. It was great having you.
Always a blast.
I've never done that before. I usually thank people individually, so I was concerned that it would just be a giant mesh of everybody saying, you know, it was a blast.
Which it was.
So yeah, more efficient, right? Working on our carbon footprint, that's what we're all about at iPhone Alley. So I don't know if that really works, but I guess that's all for us. Another episode of the iPhone Alley podcast is out the door.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.
Made up.